House Health Education and Social Services Committee to order. It's Friday, April 27th, 1990, and members present are Representative Boyer, Jack O'Gall, and myself, Representative Ellis. We have but one item on today's calendar, that's Senate Bill 254, which has been held over from previous public hearings. Legislation that goes on to the Finance Committee creating a state insurance authority. And what our work plan is today is to consider amendments that were brought before us, some by the sponsor of the bill, and then another set of amendments from Mr. Urien of the State Medical Association. I'd like to begin with the ones that are numbered, the ones from the sponsor. And Mr. Staley, I guess you helped draft these, if you could join us at the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And help us walk through those, show us, let us find how they fit into the legislation, and then let us know which concern they attempt to address, and then the substance of the amendment. And I'll entertain a motion for amendment number one.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Amendment number one is the item before us.
Mr. Chairman, I think on amendment number one, you have also in your packet a letter from the Department of Health and Social Services, Deputy Commissioner Perdue, explaining basically what we're trying to do here with amendment number one, and that's clarify that there are persons within the healthcare system today that are receiving benefits through the state that are not state employees. They're not a part of the benefits package that's provided to employees, and should be addressed here to just clarify the fact that there are different persons receiving benefits from the state that are not employees.
Are there questions or comments about amendment number one? Sir, the record should reflect that Representative Rumberg has joined us.
I'm sorry.
Let me give you a minute to get out a copy of the bill. We're on House Bill 254. That's the only bill we're dealing with today. And then we have numbered amendments before us.
I'm sorry. I was in another meeting. Could somebody say in 25 words or less what this one, number one, does?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gruenberg, amendment number one clarifies participant question as to those persons who receive health benefits through the state that are not state employees.
Will they be eligible to participate in this?
They are exempted because they are not state employees. They would be covered under Department of Health and Social Services, Medicare programs, I think Department of Education, vocational programs, and corrections, I believe, has some programs.
Okay. I'm okay, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion of amendment number one? Is there any objection to adoption of amendment number one? And I would, since, you know, this is a markup session, I would entertain brief comments from members of the audience if there are points that we're missing or concerns that you'd like to raise. Is there anyone at this time on amendment number one? Okay, without objection, amendment number one.
Okay.
Has been adopted. I'll entertain the motion for adoption of amendment number two.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Amendment number two is the item before us, Mr. Bailey.
Mr. Chairman, I believe yesterday in your packet there was a letter from Mr. Glenn Lundell, Municipality of Anchorage, expressing concern that that the representatives on the board for representing school boards and municipalities should be participating members in the plan that the authority is providing. Amendment number two would take care of that concern and require that upon the appointment, after the initial appointees have served their term, subsequent appointments would be made by those persons who are representing school districts and municipalities that are participants in the plan from the authority.
The Municipality of Anchorage's original suggestion was that the first part of the plan be optional, as well as the procurement, the second phase of the plan under a state insurance authority, and that those board members serving would be from participating at the first phase. So it's sort of an in-between kind of deal. Is there further discussion of amendment number two? Any questions, Mr. Staley? Is there anyone in the audience who cares to comment on this amendment? If not, is there objection to adoption of amendment number two? Without objection, so ordered. Entertain a motion on amendment number three.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, amendment number three is before us, Mr. Staley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Looks good.
Amendment number three was drafted after a concern brought up by Mr. J. Frank at yesterday's meeting concerning the waiver provisions in the legislation and the term contract and who that specifically would apply to. In discussions with the drafters and Mr. Frank again, we've concluded that it's probably best just to delete that sentence so that there's no reference or confusion brought about.
Questions or comments on amendment number three? Mr. Frank?
I have no comment other than to concur with what Mr. Staley says. The ambiguity by the reference to the term contract, the second reference to contract in that sentence, concerning whether it refers to the insurance contract or the contract with the participant, we think that's removed by just a deletion of the sentence.
Is there objection to adoption of amendment number three? If not, so ordered. Mr. Boyer?
I move amendment number four, Mr. Chairman. Okay.
That's the item before us, Mr. Staley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment number four would add another paragraph in the definition section, which clearly indicates that for purposes of electing to participate, an employer is a municipality, a school district, a collective bargaining unit, or a public corporation of the state created in a principal executive department. I think this resolves a concern that was brought up over the last few days and was aired again yesterday at the table.
Comments or questions on amendment number four? Anyone from the audience care to comment? Definition of employer. Is there any objection to amendment number four? Hearing none, so ordered. Mr. Staley, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Urien, I'd like to invite you to the table to discuss with us, I guess there are two amendments here. The two pages are two separate
It's all interrelated, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so it's one big amendment. We will call the Urien packet amendment number five. Mr. Urien, Mr. Boyer, would you move amendment number five?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, amendment number five is before us. Mr. Urien, would you like to speak to your proposal?
Rick Urien, representing the Alaska State Medical Association. The people I represent are don't like or are very hesitant to accept a price fixing measure which the bill before you 254 as it reads sort of does. It sets a fee that you will pay. Doctors aren't allowed to get together and set fees, and we don't think the state should set our fees. But the bill before you is an insurance bill, and so what we've done here is change the rate schedule to a benefit schedule, and the net effect to the state. Your purpose here, as I have heard the prime sponsor and everyone else speak, is to save the state money in its insurance costs. That's the purpose, and the effect of this amendment will do exactly that. What you say here is for a certain procedure, the recipient will. The insurance company will pay this amount of money for that procedure. It's a rate schedule. It's a benefit schedule on an insurance level. And the provider, if the procedure, say, is $800 and the benefit schedule says they'll pay $6, then the provider bills the patient for the additional $200. But the effect to the state is the same as the intent of the original language in the bill. My first conversation with the prime sponsor of this piece of legislation, after he had been through numerous hearings, I asked about this, and he thought that what his bill proposed was what my amendment says. He thought that's what it was. And Mr. Staley, who was in the room, was in that meeting, and it was only a gentleman from San Francisco, wherever he's from, that clarified, told Mr. Duncan that's not what his intent of. The prime sponsor of this legislation thought his bill meant this. So my amendment makes it say what he thought it said, and not the gentleman from San Francisco.
Mr. Urien, thank you. And before we go through the second page here, could you just help put this in perspective for us from your point of view about what is objectionable from your viewpoint about the state using its collective economic muscle by drawing together state employees to purchase health insurance as a group, to go with a system of preferred providers, finding those licensed medical, you know, health professionals who will provide a quality service at a price less than what the top of the scale might be in terms of charges made by other health professionals. I'm trying to figure out if there's anything illegitimate about the state doing that in a marketplace that is quite expensive, where there is usage that may not be justified in individual medical, health situations of various individuals, where the state is sort of in a desperate position to control its health costs and the costs of state employee health benefit packages. What is objectionable with the state trying to control costs in this fashion?
I guess one of our objections is that it seems to me that the state is unwilling to tell its employees that we're only going to pay this amount. Your benefit package is this in their negotiations. Mm-hmm. They're unwilling to say this is the bottom line. Instead, they're coming to those of us, you, the legislature, passes bills and laws mandating this coverage, mandating that coverage, telling what the insurance things, and then you criticize the provider for giving it and charging money. But you're not willing to tell your employees that this is what the benefits are, but yet now you're going to come to the providers out there and you're going to say, this is what we can't tell our employees this, but we're going to tell you this is all we're going to pay you.
Well, Mr. Urien, that might be a fair criticism if the legislature were the people involved in the collective bargaining process, and we're not. Our role is to fund, negotiated agreements, settlements with the public employees of the state, the various bargaining units. We don't really get to sit at the table at all to negotiate with our employees. We fund what the governor is able to negotiate with the employees and what he feels is in the best interest of the state. So. In terms of your comments about benefits that are mandated, that is a responsibility that the legislature bears along with the federal government, who passes health mandates on to us in our Medicaid program, which is a driver of costs within that multi-million-dollar program. So anyway, there's enough blame to go around for everybody, I guess I'd have to say.
Mr. Chairman, the people out there are very concerned about the rising cost of health care. But, you know, we're talking about healthcare today is not healthcare 10 years ago. We're high tech, you know. But what you have before you is you're dealing with public employees. There are 135,000 people. Subtract that from the population of the state. What are you doing for the rest of them? You're going to impact their costs. With this, you're going to impact them, Mr. Chairman, and you well know with your bill that you have tried to get through the system that impacts all the people out there. This bill only addresses, it's 135,000. You know, we have 500,000 people in this state. And this is what this does, is going to increase their costs. That's what it's going to do. Now, let's be truthful about it. We can talk about our buying power for our public employees, but what about the private employees out there? What about the uninsured people? What about the people in the villages? You're impacting them severely with this type of stuff, and it's time that we really start looking at the overall picture. We're willing to sit down and...
I agree with your view that we should look at the overall picture. Now, let's go back a minute and be a little more specific about your comment about people in villages. Are you saying the Indian Health Service is going to change their practices because a state insurance authority and a pooling concept?
No, there are other people that aren't covered.
Okay. Representative Grimberg?
I'd like to go back to the chairman's original question, Mr. Grimberg. You were indicating that there are some antitrust problems when you set your rates. The lawyers have found that too. The chairman's original question was, I thought, whether there's anything illegal about, whether you were saying there's something illegal by, if the legislature passes a bill that says, we will offer insurance and pay the cost of medical care, or up to a certain amount, for any covered employee, with the proviso that the provider, the physician or whoever it is, may not charge more than a set schedule. That would require that there be an implied condition or covenant in the agreement between the patient and the provider, that not only would the provider and the patient agree that the insurer pays all or part of the cost, depending upon what the agreement is, but in addition, that the provider would charge the patient no more than a certain amount. This is of more than passing interest to me, because my law firm, which does family law, does work from time to time for employees who are covered by, for example, a union prepaid legal services plans. But as part of our agreement, we get the assurance that the money's going to be paid relatively quickly and certainly, and there's no problem in collection or billing. But on the other hand, we agree that we will charge no more than X dollars an hour, which is substantially lower than our normal hourly rate. I don't think there's anything illegal about that. It's certainly a matter of contract. And if the patient still would wish to go to me and I wanted to charge my normal rate, the patient would have to pay the whole thing. You were not implying that such an arrangement would be illegal in this legislation, were you?
No. There is a bill, if I may.
Sure.
Senator Petula has a bill in that allows for HMOs. We have not objected to that bill, which sort of does that. And there's nothing in the that says the state can't go out and negotiate with an HMO or a PPO or whatever you want to call it.
You were talking more in a matter of policy.
Yes.
Thank you.
Are there other questions or comments for Mr. Ewing? Mr. Ewing, let's dig into the details here of the change that would be made to the bill with your amendment number 5.
May I just inquire one more question along that, Mr. Chairman?
Sure. Representative Grimberg.
When you answered, you took the argument one step further, and you said, sure, you can do that if you wish in this bill, but the result is going to be that the provider's other patients will find their rates increased to make up for the loss on this. Do you have any idea, and of course it's kind of difficult to do it in general legislation where the rates aren't set, do you have any idea how much this would affect the other people's rates?
Mr. Chairman, I don't.
That's a difficult question.
I don't know the effect. That's why we say we need to get everybody at the table, not just public employees. We need everybody at the table. I know it's a poor analogy, but the state just tried to get airlines to bid a reduced rate from Anchorage to Fairbanks. What did they tell you? Wasn't in their economic interest. We don't know what they would have, how it affected the other people who fly between Anchorage and Fairbanks, but with the medical costs, you want a low rate.
And of course, an airline can do that when they have either a monopoly or near monopoly, but the physicians are all little independent operators. Yeah, that kind of muscle.
Yeah.
And still not violate the antitrust laws. Thank you.
Okay. Do you have something else?
In the when you limit people, if you think the fee schedule increases the cost of health care, like if the fee schedule increases the cost of legal fees. When you have a system that says you're only going to get X number of dollars, be it a physician or an attorney, there's the tendency that maybe the health care isn't as good, or maybe the legal service is not as good as it would have been if you were paying the going rate.
You have ethical problems if you do that. and you don't give somebody, and I don't believe most lawyers would do that, I don't believe most doctors, but there's a third effect that hasn't been touched, Mr. Chairman, that's much greater. And let us say for the purposes of discussion, you have a very busy OBGYN or a very busy family lawyer or whatever, and there are two potential patients or clients, and one person's on the lower scale, and one person's, you've got enough people to cover yourself anyway. You're just not going to take those people, and those people will find themselves denied services if they want to use their insurance. That's the real kicker, that they don't get the service because the person says, I'm too busy, I don't need to mess with all of this stuff, particularly if there's paperwork to fill out, and particularly if I don't get my full fee. That, I think, is a much greater danger.
To help the committee through this, I'd like to say that the first part on page 1 will be amendment number 5. I'm going to divide the question here, in other words, and that will be amendment number 5. The top part of page 2 will be amendment number 6, and number 7 there at the bottom of page 2. That'll help us consider these, as discrete ideas, even though that they all fall together for Mr. Erie in here.
I'm just going to object to the question of dividing thing for the purpose of discussion. Is this, if we were to adopt, say, one or two of these three questions, would that be acceptable, or would it throw the thing further out of kilter? Because I'm not sure if they
go. Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah.
I think they're all tied together. I don't think you can do one without the other, frankly.
Okay, then I'll reverse myself. It's all amendment number 5.
I think that may be.
It all stands or falls on.
As I was thinking, the benefit thing isn't a real problem, but that ties up with the rest.
Mr. Knudsen, would you like to come forward? If you can identify yourself for the record.
Earl Knudsen, Hospitals and Nursing Homes Health Association, last week. I think you can do the benefits, the amendments separately. To change the terminology on the first one to benefit schedule, I think is a very reasonable and can be done freestanding. If I may, Mr. Chairman, just comment briefly on our support for these amendments. This bill will allow you with these amendments to control costs, and that's what you're trying to do. But what this does is it keeps you out of setting up another Medicaid rate commission with all that expense and all that appeals and all those legal costs. It gives you control of the dollars that you're spending, yet still gives some freedom to the provider to balance bill if they balance bills. We want the state to be a smart buyer of health care. We want them to be able to negotiate, and this bill allows them to do that. What we plead with you is don't start by setting an arbitrary fee schedule for hospitals or doctors that is going to end us all up in court, is going to create a huge bureaucracy. I don't know what it costs you to run the Medicaid Rate Commission, but I would think it's $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000 a year. I know we have spent $100,000 a year in the last year just fighting with the Medicaid Rate Commission. And we're easy to get along with. You're going to add the doctors to this bill. You know, they could be really hostile. So I make a strong plea for this amendment. It does what you set out to do. The amendments can be considered separately.
Okay. Let me just clarify a couple of points with you, Mr. Knudsen. With this legislation, we're not setting a fee schedule, but we're giving authority to, that could be the logical extension of the legislation becoming law. When you said, did you use the term balance billing?
Yes.
Is that cost shifting, or you're talking about the amount that a healthcare provider charges over what the insurance will pay, and that varies from provider to provider? That's what you mean about balance billing.
Right. Mr. Chairman, what I'm saying is that in our system today, the person using the system, the state employer, whoever's covered by insurance, usually isn't paying the bill. What this says to that individual, that your insurance company will pay $2,000 of this bill. If the cost is $2,500, then you're going to have to participate in the cost of that. Mm-hmm. That's going to help you on utilization. It's going to help on education and awareness of the expense of that thing. So we think it's a very positive approach to control costs and leave the state with their hands on how many dollars. You know, you won't have a runaway system if you have this bill with this amendment. You'll be able to control how many dollars you're spending.
So is balance billing really, that's the same as, it's a non-mandatory copay.
That's right.
anyway.
Mr. Chairman, one more time, but it will prevent cost shifting. I am new with the Hospital Association, but I was utterly amazed. As the Medicare program has said what they will pay, as the Champions program has limited its cost, and as the Medicaid has limited its cost, the hospital administrator goes back, and he knows how much that is going to cost. And he takes that and shifts it immediately to the payer that will do it. If you look at what they're paying the different things, it's utterly amazing what happens. Cost shifting is prevalent in this society, and it has to be, because you've got the big payers, primarily Medicare, aren't paying their share. Mm-hmm.
And the Medicaid and Medicare programs, I mean, the federal government is moving toward even increased control of costs through various mechanisms within their the rules that govern those programs. The cost shifting goes on because it's allowed now with various payers that we have. The dynamic now is toward everybody going to that kind of system, mm-hmm. so that the shifts don't occur to the extent that they occur now. Anyway, I guess I could reverse myself another time and say that we could consider the first page, Amendment Number 5, and the second page, Amendment Number 6. Is that acceptable here? Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask Mr. Staley to come back to the table and help us with the sponsor's comments on these two outstanding amendments. Representative Boyer moved this whole thing, but we'll consider the first page, Amendment Number 5, before us now for discussion. Mr. Staley, would you like to comment?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think you expressed the concern here very succinctly earlier. What's being proposed here is defining a benefit, and that's something that needs to be determined through the negotiations process between the employer and the employees. The bill, as it appears before you now, indicates that rate schedules means a schedule of allowable payments for health care relative to the services based on geographic regions, actual provider cost, and the availability of service. That's where the cost is. That's what the state pays, based on the agreements that were reached through negotiations between the employer and the employees.
Mr. Knudsen or Mr. Yearling, do you have any other comment? I mean, we have a basic, a real head-to-head conflict over whether we will have rate schedules or benefit schedules. And I know health professionals feel very deeply about that. I imagine the sponsor feels deeply about his approach. Do you guys care to comment further, or anyone in the audience care to comment on, basic fundamental disagreement here?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hudson.
We would make the plea that this bill with our amendment is an outstanding start for the state to control its health insurance benefits costs. We feel that you will develop profiles on hospitals and physicians and all other providers. You'll know what those costs are going to be. This will give you the opportunity to develop and implement your payment systems, get your data, get your staff, and put the program. If you find in 2 years from now, or 3 years after the program's going, that the only way you can control that rate is to set it yourself, then you can come back and do that. But we think that this is an excellent transition process to build the administrative procedures to control hospital and nursing home or hospital and physician costs. You can always come back and make it tougher, but give us the opportunity to go into the marketplace, negotiate for what you want, but do not attempt at this time to arbitrarily identify what you're going to pay for health care, because you're not going to set it on what that doctor's charging you. You're going to set it on what your ability is to pay. And when you've let the utilization run wild, and then you come back and you run out of money, you're not going to tell that patient you can't have care. You're just going to tell that doctor and hospital, sorry, gang, This is all we'll pay for this service. And that's going to take that cost to whoever's left in the system that can pay for it. So we think this is reasonable.
Senator, please join us here at the table. It seems to me that maybe this isn't an either, you know, one or the other kind of question, but rather, I mean, aren't setting rate schedules even, you know, as much anathema as that is to health professionals in this state and I guess every other, that phrase, you know, sends fear and loathing into people. If the state's really serious about controlling costs, don't we need to address rate, you know, payment schedules as well as benefit schedules? I mean, isn't it both if we really wanted to be serious about controlling costs?
Calling costs to you or to the provider? You're worrying about costs to the state, isn't that correct?
That's what I'm worried about, yes.
Well, if you're worried about this amendment controls the cost of the state.
Senator?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry I'm late. I was off at some other meetings. I haven't really had a chance to look at this. It was delivered in the office, I think, half hour ago. As I understand what's being proposed here, this is a drastic change in the legislation. What you're really going to would be a defined benefit plan for all public employees, where this authority would define the level of benefits that will be paid. And that would be interfering with the collective bargaining process. It would be changing the way health plans are presently handled in this state, and would mean a complete change in health plans for all these entities involved. What was intended in the legislation, we've addressed, Mr. Chairman, over the last year or two, we tried to address the increasing cost of health care in this state by working with the employee groups through cost containment measures, and also they have negotiated some other changes in their coverage in order to reduce the health care cost. We've also worked with the insurance companies to a great extent to try to bring some savings in line there. And the other part of the equation, there's really three parts, are the providers. And the authority would be charged under this legislation to work with the providers to help establish rate schedules, payment systems, utilization standards that would help control the increasing cost of health insurance in this state. All this amendment really would do would be cost shifting, as I see it. All this would do would be shift the cost. It would not control the cost at all. The cost would continue to increase. It would only shift that increase to the employees, because you would have a defined benefit. What this authority would do is say, we will only pay X dollars. The insurance will only cover X dollars for this procedure, but the doctor, the providers, et cetera, would not be looked at or any consideration given as to how we might control the inflationary rise. So the rise could go along and the employees would pick up the cost. So it's really cost shifting, and I don't think really does anything as far as controlling or beginning to control the increasing cost of health care. I really believe this is an amendment that does serious damage to the intent of the legislation and will not help control health care costs in the state.
Okay. Senator, you addressed one of my concerns that was raised when we got into this. Amendment number 5 was benefit schedule, you know, the impact on collective bargaining and what kind of faith that might break with that process. And then rate schedules, I mean, the issue there is the shift, the cost shifts and the effect on the Medicaid program and other things that the state pays huge chunks of change for currently, if there would be any effect there or not. So, Senator, your position is that benefit schedule should not be part of this consideration in controlling costs to the state because of the interference with collective bargaining.
Well, two reasons, I think, basically, Mr. Chairman, I might follow. Yeah, one, it does impact collective bargaining. I mean, and we've structured this very carefully not to have an impact on present health plans in that first phase, nor to impact the collective bargaining process. And phase two, if a union opts in or if an employer group opts in for procurement, that's their own personal decision to do that. But in phase one, for the setting of rate schedules, et cetera, there is no interfering with the way present plans are structured or how the levels of benefits they pay, et cetera. That's the one reason. The second, and another just as important reason, is I don't believe this does anything other than to bring about cost shifting. It does not do anything to control the increase in cost of health care in the state.
Mr. Urey?
I have to note that we agree on, Senator Duncan and I agree on one thing. This bill is cost shifting. And under our amendment, it shifts the cost to those who receive the benefit. under his bill, it shifts the cost to those who don't receive the benefit. That's what it does. It does shift costs.
Senator, and then Mr. Benson.
We don't need to go on and debate this, but I mean, that's one way of putting it, but probably not a very, very exact way of putting it. We're not trying to shift the cost anywhere. What we're trying to do is to work with the providers, with the hospitals, the doctors, the other providers, to determine ways that we can start to control the increase in cost of health care in the state through utilization standards, working with those folks to work out better payment systems, by setting some rate schedules, and those rate schedules would depend on geographical differences and et cetera. Not to shift the cost to those individuals, but to work with them to help control costs. That's a debatable point, I guess. So.
Mr. Knudsen?
I'm trying to negotiate with my compadre here, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Duncan. I would accept leaving rate schedule in there. If that clarifies the intent that you're going to control the rates that you pay. But I would plead with you again that you then, leaving that language, that you adopt Amendment 6 on the second page.
Okay, let's set aside Amendment number 5 for a moment. Since these things are interconnected, let's go on to Amendment number 6.
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Urien, did you have a comment?
I just concurred with my colleague here that if you do change the, just leave it at rate schedule and just change the definition of rate schedule, you accomplish the same thing. We don't want to interfere with collective bargaining.
Okay, let's set aside Amendment number 5 then and go on to page 2, which is Amendment number 6. Representative Boyer, can you put that
so
in
move for us, Chairman?
Okay, Amendment number 6 is for us for discussion. Would you guys talk us through these provisions?
Mr. Chairman, basically our amendment elaborates on the definition then of that on Amendment 2 there. It'll merely read a rate schedule, what a rate schedule means, and it means what the authority will pay, and that's what you want to accomplish.
Okay, so you guys are proposing keeping the
keeping
language
the word
rate schedules, but defining it.
Using that definition of what it means.
Using this definition. Well, that's Senator.
We often get things slipped by us, but not that easily. Right? Not quite that easily. So, Mr. Chairman, I don't even understand that. What their definition number 6, their amendment number 6, of course, changes rate to benefit. Are you now suggesting you change rate back to rate?
Right.
In this
and
amendment?
Call it yeah. This.
And call it this, right?
Yeah.
Which, of course, doesn't do anything. I mean, you're just redefining rate in the way you would like it redefined,
but
and it causes the same problem that you caused earlier, because what you're really doing then is you're saying that the authority, let me tell you, I think there's a couple problems with your amendment. First of all, in phase one, there is no authorities group health insurance. In phase one, everybody has the same health insurance they presently have. If the city and borough of Juneau has health insurance through Blue Cross, they continue to have health insurance through Blue Cross. They continue to have the same benefit plan. They continue to have the same co-payment. Nothing changes with their plan. If the state of Alaska is using Aetna, they continue to have Aetna, and nothing changes with their plan unless it changes through collective bargaining. And if the state has whatever plan they have, nothing changes. The only thing in phase one we're doing is working with the providers to set up utilization standards, rate schedules, and payment systems. Does not impact the insurance authority. It does not have any group health insurance in phase one. Your definition is talking about the authority's group health insurance. The authority doesn't have any group health insurance in phase one. In phase two, they don't have any group health insurance either unless they self-insure. They may go out and procure insurance in phase two from other plans, from other companies, but they don't have any health insurance. So your amendment doesn't work, one. Your amendment just doesn't work. Secondly, if it was to work, again, you're going back to the cost shifting, where you're saying, okay, the doctors and the dentists and the hospitals can charge whatever they want to charge, and the plan will only pay a certain level. You're going back to defined benefit. So, you know, I still have serious problems with this. I think, Mr. Chairman, you know, quite honestly, and I talked with Mr. Knudsen before on this, and I'm kind of surprised that all of a sudden the concern has developed, because we had a conversation several times with this bill through the Senate, and you said your association had no problems. In fact, you were willing to to adjust to this and work with it. I think the important thing is that nobody in this state, providers, no provider, should be afraid to sit down and work to try to control cost. I think that's what should be expected when we're talking about the increasing cost of health insurance on a nationwide basis. The provider should be saying, yeah, we're willing to sit down and talk about it. But I think in this legislation, you're clearly protected enough through the definitions of those, of what a rate schedule would be, taking into consideration geographical differentials, et cetera, that we've expanded definition to, and maintaining quality of care, that no one is going to force you to do a $10,000 operation for $5,000. That's ridiculous, and I believe you would concur with that. And it's just not going to happen. But we're not going to control health care costs unless we start working together. Quite honestly, what probably will happen if we don't start working together is the whole system will collapse. And there will, you just won't be able to afford health insurance for anyone, and people won't be able to afford the medical service they need, and we're going to have a collapse of the health care system in this state. And I think if we don't start working together pretty quickly, that's a real danger. And no one is trying to run over you. That's why we're setting it up this way with an authority, and where it's very clear that we'll work with the providers to establish these rates, and that's why it's defined such to say that rate schedules, healthcare-related services based on geographical regions, actual provider costs, that word is in there. No one's saying that we're going to force you to do it at less than what it costs you to do it, and availability of services. I would just think that the healthcare profession as a whole should be saying to the people of this state, we're willing to work with you to control costs so that this whole system doesn't collapse.
Senator, therefore, you were reading about the setting, you know, in the latter phase, the setting of the rate schedule. You mentioned on actual cost. Would consideration be given to the usual and customary fee? I mean, you can talk about what it costs to provide the health service. You know, it is reasonable to allow for some, I mean, you know, provision of health care in the state is a business for most of the
sure.
sector that provides that, a for-profit business. Would it be reasonable to say with consideration for usual and customary fee in the setting of the rates? Because just consideration of what the actual cost of providing the service, if the rate is set on that, it's not a for-profit business anymore. It's a public charity for those people in the private sector offering health services. Do you have any comment on that?
Maybe I can ask somebody else who deals in the field. I think Karen has got her hand.
Come on up, Karen. Just state your name for the record, if you could.
Karen Perdue, Deputy Commissioner of Health and Social Services. In the Medicaid program, usual and customary is used for physician services. It's one way of setting rates. Another way of setting rates is DRGs. Another way of setting rates is capping certain fees for certain procedures and having some UCP. So it's just one way of doing rate setting.
Okay.
Theoretically, all of the ways of doing rate setting allow for actual cost, and actual cost then is not always just, you know, the wet cost of going in there and doing an operation.
Okay. Usual and customary fee is a term of art that means a certain thing that. But you're saying that the use of the term in the legislation, the cost of providing the service, or whatever the phrase was, that any kind of rate setting takes into account a reasonable kind of return for the service beyond the actual cost of providing the service?
Well, that's the theory of a...
So a reference to usual and customary fee means something other than just a consideration for a profit, a reasonable level of...
What the UCP does, or UCR does, is it, first of all, it updates itself on a schedule, and it says if there are 100 people providing a service for $100, usually there's a percentile at which it's set. Let's say we're going to pay at the 90th percentile. Mm-hmm. I think that's what Aetna pays at, 90th percentile. That means that if whatever the 90th percentile of those 100 people charging is what we pay for that procedure.
Mm-hmm.
So it allows for a grouping, geographic grouping, to capture the market. It goes out and captures the market. What a DRG does is say, we're going to tell you how much we pay for this service. If it costs you less, great. If it costs you more, too bad. So it's just two ways of setting setting rates, and I don't think that either rate setting methodology is going to be very successful in the long run if it doesn't recognize some semblance of actual cost. Providers will simply drop out of the program. They simply won't provide the services. So mm-hmm. I think it's a harmless, I think it's probably a quality addition to the to the definition of rate schedules if it's clear that it's only one way of setting rates, that UCP is only one way of setting rates, and that the authority
to consider amendments number 5 and 6. But did you have a comment on the conversation?
Well, I just had the response of the good Senator Duncan, and that this was a friendly amendment. I'm joining with him to make this a better bill.
And Mr. Knutson, he understands that at a very deep level.
Some of us understand.
Tell it.
I appreciate all your help.
As I've said in previous meetings, our goal here today was to have, you know, this work session and markup session and consider amendments. The bill is moving on to the Finance Committee. I have some trepidation because I, you know, this is a bill worthy of attention and discussion by the Finance Committee. I want to see this bill move along. I don't want to see the Finance Committee just sort of pass it along and not really think through the issues here in a fairly detailed way. So I hope the Finance Committee will reserve time on their schedule to give this the kind of attention it deserves. Mr. Urien, go ahead and make the comment that I think you're about to make.
Mr. Chairman, we have, I don't know how many days left in the session, but it's too few. And you know the pressure on the Finance Committee during this time of the year. To expect them to take this and deal in depth, I don't think that's going to happen. And I think the only place that's going to get reasonable review from reasonable people and is from you and your committee, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. And we would hope that you would do that.
Had this bill before us at 3 public hearings, and I've accommodated everyone who wants to discuss it. And you know, I've done my best to have my members in the room. They all are running around doing other business, but we've tried to have them here to focus on this bill and give it due consideration. And we're considering all amendments brought before us. So within the constraints of the legislative process, such that it is, I don't know what else we can do. Now, I know that you would like me to hold this bill in this committee and for it not to pass the legislature. I'm unwilling to not let it go on the Finance Committee. You know, I haven't figured out how I'm going to sign the committee report yet, but I don't feel like I want to say this bill isn't moving for further consideration. But I do, you know, I'll tell you, I feel very uncomfortable. Would feel very uncomfortable if the bill came to the floor without the Finance Committee members taking a hearing or two to talk about this and know what we're getting into here. Because I think Senator Duncan has brought, you know, legislation before us that is, you know, can be far-reaching in its implications, but I don't think it's unwarranted given the state of our health system and the cost of our health system or lack thereof in the state of Alaska. I mean, these are paramount issues that would have a vehicle for being addressed here. My House Bill 581, which is not competing legislation, it's complementary legislation, passed out of finance today, but I'm not all that optimistic about that getting all the way through the process. I'm going to keep pushing, but that's a forum, a task force to look at, you know, provision of health services universally in the state. Senator Duncan's proposing a way of with, you know, the use of the economic muscle of state employees or public employees in the state, of trying to control some costs. And we have basic philosophical differences here among our group of how best to go about that. So I just, you know, we could consider this further here in the HES committee, but it would mean the bill dying in this, as we adjourn this legislative session. And I can't, you know, I don't think that's the most responsible thing. There may be more changes that need to be made in this bill. I don't know. We've considered several here. But there may be some adjustments. And I'm willing to entertain those here in the balance of our time, about 11 minutes. Mr. Urien?
If I may, since I have this public forum to
clarify some points that.
Sure, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, because Senator Duncan and I have had some conversations along these lines. I would appreciate if you would tell him, I don't think I've ever asked you or any member on this committee to hold this bill in this committee.
Oh, no, 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 I didn't mean that you had.
Well, I just wanted him to know that.
Right.
I'd be delighted. For other reasons. And we're trying, like Mr. Nutz and I are in at the end of this table, and if you adopt our amendments, it may help Mr. Duncan. I'm sure Senator Duncan will be glad to help you with 581 now that it's in the Senate.
I just, for the record, be delighted to hear anything kind from the doctors.
Well, Mr. Urien, I'm happy to have you put those first, 581's going to stand on its merits in the Senate. I know Senator Duncan's going to view it that way. In terms of, I don't know, you know, we're into that. It's that time of year, Senator. Let's go with the flow here. Mr. Urien, I'll clarify as well that no one has asked me to hold this bill. It's just the general impression that there are differences with Senator Duncan's approach, and some people would prefer the bill to stay here for further study, and, you know, that's all I meant. There's been no request by anybody. It's just a general sense I get with people being uncomfortable with this approach. Senator.
I'm not, can I vote on your committee?
We don't need you.
You moved on to the lower house, what can we say?
I know.
We'd love to have you back.
Mr. Chairman, on the legislation, you know, I think it is substantial, and I think that the problems we're facing with the health care system in this state are pretty substantial. Not just for those people who have health care, but for those people who can't afford it. And, you know, this legislation, I think, has potential, as you're looking at in your task force, to expand beyond just the public sector and into the private sector, et cetera. We're addressing, first of all, though, the problem that we see with the inflationary spiral. And I got to say that I appreciate the amendments you're offering. It's just that, you know, I've been begging for amendments as we've brought this thing through the Senate. We went through three committees, and I kept looking for people to testify, and nobody would testify. And I thought we had a great piece of legislation because nobody was speaking against it at any committee hearings. So, in fact, the Finance Committee, nobody testified
at all. And on the other hand, you may have begged a few people not to testify, and I'm going to leave with that one.
No. In fact, the committee hearing was open to testify, and no one could testify. So, the point that I'm trying to make, Mr. Chairman, is there has been ample opportunity for these various proposals to be discussed, and we are happy to discuss those. They should be considered. I just believe that the ones that are being offered by Mr. Urien or by the Health Association is an entirely different approach to legislation, and it means defined benefit. It means cost shifting to employees, to the consumer, and it really doesn't solve the problem of increasing health care costs.
Anyone else? We set aside amendment number 5 previously, and then we had amendment number 6 before us for discussion. So I will consider those sort of in limbo, and we'll come back to a clean slate and ask if there is anyone who wants to move amendment number 5.
Mr. Chairman, what is amendment 5?
It's the first sheet of this.
So we are dividing this?
Yes, we agreed to the first page is 5, and the entire second page is amendment number 6. Okay, is there anyone who cares to offer amendment number 6? Okay, neither amendment has been offered for the committee's consideration. Are there other amendments or anything else to come before the committee on this bill? I plan to recommend to the Finance Committee chairs that in the scheduling of this bill in the Finance Committee, that they realize the major issues raised by the legislation and plan to give it due time on the committee schedule. And I know Mr. Urien's comments are well taken in the fact that the Finance Committee is very busy at this time of the year, but either in a subcommittee or in the full committee, they really should consider the issues and because they are important to the fiscal health of the state. I'll entertain a motion on final disposition of Senate Bill 254 at this time.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we pass out CS for SB 254, Hess, with individual recommendations.
Is there objection to the motion? Hearing none, the bill moves with individual recommendations on to the Finance Committee.
That's it?
Yeah, I just need to announce what our committee schedule for next week will be. I think everybody here is, I just want to make an announcement on the record that anyone who hasn't signed the confirmation letters yet, to please do so, because those will be turned in the very near future. On Monday, April 26th, we'll be taking Senate Bill 431, which is health facility payment rates, Senate Bill 524, which is emergency medical and ambulance services, and if we receive Senate Bill 326, grants for community health planning, that will be on the schedule. It's on the schedule now, pending referral, and if we have it by then, it will be considered. We'll also have a briefing from the Department of Education on HJR 43 safety belts at school buses, and then we would have any other meetings as necessary. But those are all the bills that we think we'll have.
Can we just have?
Oh, and what's the number? We will also have on Monday legislation relating to subsidized guardianships.
Is that a Senate bill?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's currently in our committee. Mm-hmm. There's a pending referral. We currently have that, so that will be up as well.
May we just have
so a brief? So I'd ask members to be on time.
Can we just have a brief of these?
Sure. At this time, I would announce a referral of House Bill 305 relating to family marriage and family therapists regulation or licensing and regulation of marriage and family therapy. I will refer that to a subcommittee chaired by Representative Grunberg and consisting of myself and anyone else who would like to be involved.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I plan to ask the bill to move, but maybe over the interim we can have some hearings and get that in some shape and report back, have a report to the next legislature on that. Thank you very much.
Is there any further business to come before us? If not, we're adjourned at 9:55 a.m.